Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Kuf Yud Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins roughly in the middle of the page. You'll notice the second wide line of the Gemara, toward the end of the line, a quote from the Mishnah, Ein Shomin Lo. The Mishnah had described a person that hired a worker to clear his field from straw and stubble. The worker approached the employer and said, "Give me my wages." Employer said, "Why don't you just keep the straw and stubble that you cleared away as your pay? Straw and stubble has value." And we'll make the obvious assumption that the value of the straw and stubble corresponds to what he would have been paid anyway. The Mishnah tells us that we don't abide by the instructions or the command of the employer, and the worker can insist on getting his pay in terms of whatever they originally agreed upon. For simplicity's sake, let's say they agreed to he was to be paid a certain cash amount. He can insist on receiving the cash. Before we get into the Gemara text, we glance at the side where we have our nosei, a topic heading, / mivne, structural note, where we offer a brief heading to what we will be discussing, and in addition, a structural note which features the markings that will appear in this immediate section. The double underline that you see represents tshuvos shel Rav Nachman. These are answers that Rav Nachman provides liyashev habraisim a mishnah to resolve what seems to be a discrepancy between the mishnah and a Tanaic source, a brisa, ba'omer lo, where the employer says tul ma she'asisa v'schorcha, take what you did as your pay. Lefi ha'mishnah ein shem lo, according to our mishnah, we don't listen to the employer, and as we said, the worker can insist on his cash payment. According to a brisa that we'll see shortly in the Gemara, the employer can insist on the alternative form of pay, namely the item that the employer worked on. In the case of the Mishnah, the straw and stubble, he will have to keep that as pay, and the employer does not have to give him the cash payment that the employer may be insisting on. So as you scan ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice several double underlines, each time highlighting Rav Nachman's name. What happens in the course of the Gemara, and for this we introduce the house marking, you can see we call this a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give and take. When the first house marking appears, it will be introducing a series of kushios al hanal, questions. You'll see in an alternating fashion, after the first answer is given, the Gemara will raise a question. And an inverted house will appear, tshuva chadasha, a new response will be introduced. And as you scan ahead, you can see the Gemara goes back and forth, question, answer, until we end up tallying up three answers along the way offered by Rav Nachman to resolve the Mishnah, which said Ein Shomin Lo, which gives the worker the upper hand, and the Braisa Shomin Lo, which gives the employer the upper hand. Now the Gemara. V'ha Tanya, we're at the third wide line of the Gemara. V'ha Tanya Shomin Lo. Do we not have a Braisa that says we listen to him, the employer's offer or insistence on worker taking the item he worked on as his pay? How do we resolve that with the Mishnah? Omar Rav Nachman lo kasha. Rav Nachman says there's no discrepancy, there's no contradiction. Kan bisholo, kan bishol chavero. It depends when the employer hired him to work. If he hired the employee to work bishalo on his own property, that's what the Mishnah was referring to. And in such a case, he's called a sochir. The pasuk says, "Lo solin pula sochir tchad boker." And since he's working for you, he's called your employee. And the word sochir implies, as Rashi explains, the Rashi that I'm referring to, by the way, is on the Mishnah's third, fourth line from the top. And that is that it implies he gets paid what the original agreement was. So in our case, assuming the original agreement was a cash payment, the pasuk that says lo solin pula sochir ad boker implies he gets just that. I should point out there are other meforshim that offer a different source to this idea, but that's the idea that in a case where he is your worker, he gets what he, the worker, wanted and not what the employer is offering. And on the other hand, the Braisa, Shomilo, that's Bishel Chavero. You hired someone to work on someone else's property. Omar Lei Rabo LeRav Nachman. Here we're introducing now a question on that particular answer. So Rabo challenges Rav Nachman. Bishalo maitaimo, with regard to his own field. Why is it there we say we don't listen to the employer? Diomale, the worker, says, agro aloch. You're obligated to cover my wages, to pay me my wages, that which we explained earlier. Well, bishal chavero nami, schoro alov. In the case of someone hiring a worker to work on someone else's field, the same arrangement exists. Desanya, the Braisa explains, haseichas apoyo lasos bishalo. Someone hired a worker to work on his property. Vehereu bishal chavero, and the employer pointed out to the worker, work over there, and he was pointing out the friend's property. Noisein loy schoro mushlam. And here we dashed underline, this is the main point, that even though the worker is working on someone else's property, the one who hired him has to pay that worker full wages. V'choser v'notem mibal habayis ma shehana oisoi. This fellow who hired the worker and paid him is entitled to receive compensation from the one who benefited from that work, whatever the value of that benefit was. But what we want to focus on is the point that Noisein Loisro Mushlam applies even when you hired a worker to work on someone else's property. So there's no distinction between Bishalo and Bishal Chavero. In both cases, the worker has the upper hand, can insist on receiving his cash payment. Well, if that's the case, then how do we account for the Braisa that says we listen to the employer and worker gets alternative type pay? Elo Omar Rav Nachman lo kashya, kan bishalo kan bishal hefker. When it comes to your own property, so there we don't listen to the employer. The employer must provide the original agreement, whatever that was. If it was a cash payment, that's what it is. And he can't insist on the worker taking the item that he was working on as payment. Kan b'shel hefker, there we will listen to the employer. What is b'shel hefker? An employer hires someone to work on something that's unowned. Now, there's an important explanation for this that Rashi points out, that this is Rav Nachman consistent with his opinion elsewhere. Namely, that when the worker picks up the hefker is that which is unowned. When he picks up that which is unowned, it does not become the property of the employer. In Hebrew, we refer to this hamagbia metzi lechavero, lo kona chavero. When the worker picks up whatever he's working on that's unowned, it does not become the owner's. And therefore, as the worker picks it up, he's picking it up for himself. And as a result, we would not say that the efforts of the worker reflect back upon the employer. And therefore, you don't have this wage obligation that forms. There's no obligation that forms that results when a worker is working on Hefker. Esvei Ravol Rav Nachman. Now we're going to present a source, and in this source we will see the phenomenon of a worker picking up mitzias. Mitzias is that which is unowned. And in the event that a worker was hired by someone to do work throughout the day, the picked up items belong to the employer, to the balabayas. And Rashi explains that this source shows that when you're dealing with a worker, and I contrast worker with just any old person. In other words, you can have a passerby picking up a found item for someone else, and there you could say, "Amagbia mitzil lechavero, lo kona chavero." But when you're dealing with a worker, the worker is like the long arm of the employer. So once again, even when you're dealing with that which is unowned, the worker is working on behalf of the employer, and that would create the wage relationship. And therefore, the case of Hefker could not be an example of Shoymin Lo, that we would listen to the employer. It's an employer-employee wage relationship. And as we said before, that will force the employer to pay what the original agreement was. And that's in accordance with the Mishnah of Ein Shoymin Lo. We don't listen to the employer's insistence. Now let's read this inside. Esvei Rava leRav Nachman. Rava challenges Rav Nachman's answer that the case of Shoymin Lo refers to Hefker. Metzias poyel leAtzmoi. That which a worker finds, the worker keeps. Amosai. When do we say that? Bizman Shoymin Lo balabayas. When his employer gave specific instructions as to why this fellow is being employed. Nacheshimi hayoim, where the employer hired someone to weed his field today. Oh, ador imi hayom, or till my soil today. So the worker has specific instructions, and if in the course of the day he happens to pick up an item for himself, so he'll have to compensate the owner for the few seconds that he was involved with a departure from his specified work, but the worker keeps it. Avolim omalo, and here's where we want to be. We become really interested. If the worker was hired, aseimi malocha hayom, general work, all kinds of work, do that for me and you'll get paid. Well then, but see also the balabayas. The found item goes to the owner. What do you see then? Then when you're dealing with Hefker, the worker is like a long arm of the balabayas. And therefore, the employer-employee relationship exists even by Hefker. And therefore, the Mishnah's ruling would be in place. Ein Shoymin Lo. If there was an agreed upon wage, that's what the worker can insist on. Elo Omar Rav Nachman Lo Kashya. So we have to still resolve. The Mishnah, so far we have a pretty clear understanding of all the cases that the Mishnah addresses of Ein Shoymin Lo. But what about the Braisa that says Shoymin Lo, we would listen to the employer in his insisting upon the worker taking the alternative type of pay? Lo Kashya. Kan behagbo, kan behabota. We look at Rashi. The Rashi that we'll look at together is about halfway down the page. Kan behagbo, kan behabota. Behefker. Both source, Bishel Hefker, both the Mishnah and the Brisa are dealing with cases of Hefker, of the that which is unowned. Masnisin Bishesogar Scharu Nilaki Tevin Vikash Bahagbo, the Poyal. The Al Korchach Scharu Olov. Worker hired to clear straw and stubble from an unowned field. So with the worker picking it up, it becomes like the owner's. And that creates the employer-employee relationship. And therefore, there is a wage that is owed. And that's why we say, Ein Shomin Lo. The employer must pay the original agreed-upon wage. Habota means gazing upon something. So Rashi continues, Ubraisa, Kishesochroi Lemeleches Habota, Kagon Lishmor. The worker was hired to watch the unknown field where his there's no element of acquisition. There's no picking up. Alternatively, he was hired to cast groundward something from a height down to the ground. Once again, where there's no picking up. Picking up is an act of acquisition. It's a kinyan. But in the absence of that, akati lo zakoi be ano, where the employer in that case can say, I didn't acquire those items yet. Zila zochi be, you go acquire it for yourself. Now, as we continue in the Gemara, after having seen a resolution of the Mishnah with the Brisa, we have a new marking, a crown shape, and we glance at the side under our Nosei / Mivneh heading. The crown represents Deos Behabota Behefker, opinions regarding gazing upon, looking upon that which is unowned. Kaine does that acquire Ihave, and in our discussion in the Gemara, the issue of Habota Behefker, is it Kona, does it acquire Yavi Machlikas Tanoim? Does that constitute, or is that the subject of, a Tanaic disagreement? Hagemora Todun B'Machlikas Tanoim B'Inyan Tashlum Schar Avur Shomrei Sfichim B'Shvias. The Gemara will focus on a discussion concerning the pay of those during the sabbatical year when fields are not cultivated. And on the other hand, there is a need for grains for the Omer offering, the barley offering on the 16th of Nisan, and the Shtei HaLechem wheat offering on the holiday of Shavuos, both in the Beis HaMikdash. The source of those grains in a Shemitah year would be from, we'll say, wild-growing grains, uncultivated grains. They were not deliberately planted. Obviously, it's a sabbatical year when agricultural activity is highly restricted and forbidden. In the event that they find uncultivated or wild growing grains, so people will be hired. They're called shomrei svichim. Svichim are the uncultivated grains on the Shemitah year. So that barley is available for the Omer offering and wheat available for the two loaf offering of Shavuos. Shem Korbonos Sibor. They are public offerings. And as such, public offerings must come from, we'll call, public funds. Private donations, private dedications are not acceptable when it comes to a public sacrifice, a public offering. That is the, we'll say, the immediate topic that will serve, we'll say, as a jump-off point for regarding the discussion of Habota Behefker, looking upon a visual connection with that which is unknown. Is that said to acquire? That, of course, has a that's the direct connection to what Rav Nachman said a moment ago, where, according to Rav Nachman, apparently, the fact that a worker is looking upon that which is unowned does not acquire it. There's no acquisition that takes place. Now the Gemara. Omar Rabo, Habota Behefker, gazing upon, looking upon that which is unowned, is there acquisition in through the act of looking upon the unowned? Tanoihi, that is a machlokes tanoim. The Snan, Shomrei Sfichei Shvius, those that are hired to watch the uncultivated grains, wheat grains, barley grains, on a sabbatical year. Shvius is the Shemitah year. Neutlin Schoron Mitrumas Alishka, they receive pay from the Beis HaMikdash treasury. That's the Trumas Alishka. Rabbi Yossi Yomer, HaRoitze Misnadev Hu, V'Shomer Chinam. Someone who wants to volunteer, he can watch, and he is an unpaid guard. So as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned, there's no payment for this service. Omru lo, the rabbis said him, Ata Omer Kane, Ein Boyen, Michel Tzibor. Now this phrase is very difficult to understand as it is. We will wait for the Gemara to develop it, to develop an understanding of this. If we translate it, you'll see it doesn't make sense. The rabbi said to Rabbi Yossi, well, if you say that if the guard is going to watch gratis, then the grains, when they're brought as a sacrifice, are not from the public. Well, you see, if anything, if he's watching for free, so then it's clearly the public's. My love, behal komifliki. What is the underlying point of disagreement here? The Tanakama Sovar Habota Behefker Koni, gazing upon that which is unowned, would acquire. So imagine you have a guard looking upon the unowned wild growing grains. He'll acquire them. They'll be his. And if it's his, then we pointed out earlier, it won't be considered acceptable as a public sacrifice. Therefore, v'i yaha ivi le agro in, if he receives pay, so the worker, the guard, is getting the money from the temple treasury as pay, and the grains don't become his. Then in means then it'll be acceptable as a public sacrifice. V'i loi, and if he doesn't get paid, and he was looking at it, Habota Behefker is kind of, that he was looking at it becomes his. V'rabiosi Sovar, Habota Behefker lo koni. Looking upon that which is unknown does not acquire it for you. V'chi azli tzibur umaisi. And when the public brings that as an offering, Hashtahu the Kozochi Bay. It's at that point that it becomes owned. It wasn't owned by anybody up till that point. The Gemara asks, Uma Ata Oimer. And you'll see this marking also repeats itself. We have to explain the Tanakama's reaction to Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah. We just heard in the name of Rabbi Yossi that Habota is not Kona. If Habota is not Kona, then it's pretty smooth sailing that the grains will be a public sacrifice. And yet when we saw the Tanaic source just a couple lines up, the arrows, by the way, to the side help you find where you saw it, it said they were saying to him, well, according to you, it's not going to be from the public. But if anything, it's quite the opposite. According to Rabbi Yossi, it very much is from the public. There was no acquisition. The Habota was lo koneh, and that's what the Gemara is asking now. Uma ata oimer. What were they saying in objection to Rabbi Yossi? Hochi ko amri le. Thusly, they were saying. midvorecha, according to you, that he's going to watch gratis for no pay, lidvorenu, according to our opinion, that habota is kaina, that mere looking upon that which is unowned is a means of acquisition. Then the Omer, the barley offering of the 16th of Nisan, and the Shtei Alechem, the two loaf offering of Shavuos, are not going to be from the Tzibur, from the public. He was watching for nothing, but in the course of his watching, he's looking at it, and we hold that looking upon it is a means of acquisition. It becomes the Shomer's. Omar Rava, lo. Rava responds, as we saw before with our crown marking, this is a response to Rava claiming that Habote Behefker, he said Tanoi, he said it was a Machlokes Tanoyim. Rava reacts not so low. The Kule Alma, everyone is in agreement. You'll notice if you look carefully at our marking scheme, we highlighted earlier the expression tanoihi with a dash underlining, and we dashed the line de kule alma, so you can see the contrast between Rava and Rava before. Rava is not Rava, obviously, it's a different opinion. Rava, spelled with an aleph at the end, says no, de kule alma habota behefker kani. Everyone agrees that the mere looking upon it is a means of acquisition. Well, if it's a means of acquisition, we have to, and everyone agrees with that, so I'm sure the first question that pops into your mind is, how will it possibly become a public sacrifice? Well, the answer to how it would become a public sacrifice is if that shomer, the guard, would transfer ownership of it, deliver it with a full heart to the public, and becomes the public's. The controversy in the Tanaic source between the Tanakama and Reb Yossi was the fear that he might not give it over with a full heart. If we could be convinced that he'd give it over with a full heart, then fine, we're home free, it'll become a public sacrifice. But if you're fearful that he might not do it with a full heart, then we can see a problem. The Rabbonon Savri, the Rabbonon who said he gets paid, Yavinu le'agra, pay him for his services. Below, if you don't pay him, Chayshinon, if you're going to rely on his, let's say, his voluntary delivery to the public, we're afraid, Chayshinon, Shemolo, Yimsurim, Yafa, Yafa. He might not give it over with a full heart. He'll want the credit of having been the donator of the those respective grain offerings. It's a good feeling to have that I'm the one that's responsible for it. Of course, it all backfires in the sense that it's not an acceptable sacrifice, but you have to deal with the human element. And in order to make sure, in order to ensure that he's giving it over with a full heart, give him money. Rabbi Yossi Savar, lo chayshinon shema lo yimsreim yafa yafa. We don't have to worry about that. We can leave everything on a purely voluntary basis. It's true, habota behefker koni, as Rava pointed out, even according to Rabbi Yossi. But when it comes to giving it over to the public, he'll do it with a full heart. The Gemara asks, Uma ata oimer? If, according to Rabbi Yossi, it's clear that it will be coming from the public because he gives it over with a full heart, so what were the rabbis saying to him that according to you it won't come from the public? If anything, he says it will be from the public. Hochi ko'amri lei. Thusly, the rabbis were saying to him, midvorecha, according to your approach, that he doesn't get paid, lidvorenu, according to us, that we're choshesh, he won't give it over, yafe yafe, namely, dechayshinon shema liyimsrem yafe yafe, that he won't give it over with a full heart. Ain omer shtalecha boy and Michel Tzibor. And the result will be that those grain offerings will not be coming from the public coffers as is required. Iko Diamri, another version. There are those that say, that present Rava in an opposite direction from the first presentation. If you notice with our crown markings, the first crown accompanying Rava was marked 2 Aleph. To the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. Here, you have an inverted crown we call Beis, second version, in fact, an opposite version of Rava. Whereas, the first version of Rava had him saying, everyone holds Habota Behefker Kani, that looking upon that which is unowned is a means of acquisition, here, Iko Diamri, Rava Omar, the Kule Alma, Habota Behefker Lo Kani. Everyone will agree that the mere gazing upon it is not going to be a means of acquisition. Well, if that's the case, then why would the Rabbonon be so concerned that the Shomer gets paid? The Shomer isn't acquiring it. It will remain, or when the public takes it, it'll become the public's. There was no acquisition prior to that. The Hocha, regarding the Shomer Svichim, our concern for the Bale Zroos, the strong-armed individuals, the strong-armed characters in the general population. We take a look at Rashi toward the bottom of the Rashi commentary. If we don't create public awareness that these grains, these uncultivated grains, are destined to be for the Beis HaMikdash. In the absence of such awareness, Yesh Bali Zroh Shelochen Osam B'chozko Liatzman, there are tough characters that will come along and take these grains for themselves. Mind you, these are uncultivated grains that are being guarded. But tough guys come along, they don't care too much about the guards, and will take the grains for themselves. However, if we can create public awareness that the grains are destined for the Beis HaMikdash, so they'll withdraw. They won't strong-arm them away. How do we create the public awareness? The Tanakama Sovar, the Takinu Rabbonon, Lemesiv Le Arbazuzi. The rabbis instituted that the Shomer shall be paid 4 Zuz. Zuz is a form of currency. Kihechi the Lishmari Balizros, the Lifushu Minayo, so that the ruffians, Lishmari, they hear about it. The payment creates noise, so to speak, public awareness. The lifrishuminei, and they will separate themselves. They will depart, stay away, withdraw from trying to acquire those grains. Rabbi Yossi Sovar Lo Takinu. Rabbi Yossi said there was no institution of pay to accomplish that ends. Apparently, according to Rabbi Yossi, there is sufficient public awareness to deter the ruffians even without the pay. They won't bother. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Uma Ata Oimer. What were the Rabbonon objecting to Rabbi Yossi when they said to him, according to you, the grains aren't going to be coming from the public? Hachi Ko Amri Lei. Thusly, the rabbis were saying to Rabbi Yossi, Midvorecha, according to you, that there was no institution of paying the guards. Lidvorenu, according to us, that guards are to be paid. So you're going to have the following situation. According to you, that in actuality, the guards aren't going to be paid. In our opinion, that the guards have, we'll say, a theoretical payment waiting for them. So there's four zuz that that according to the rabbis are due or owed to the guards. But according to your Biosi, the guards aren't going to get the pay. So there's money in the money, so to speak, or money that's awaiting these guards. If they don't get the pay, Ein Boin Michel Tzibor, then the result will be that the grains are not coming from exclusively public funds. Now, further explanation, we look at Rashi. Second line from the top. L'devoreinu, according to us, the Svirulon, the Tekinu, Rabon Arbo, Zuzi Minat Truma, L'Shomrei Svichim. That the Shomrei Svichim, the guards of the uncultivated grains, are to receive four Zuz. V'zeh Moichel Aleihem. And this guard is foregoing the payment. That's a reflection of Rabbi Yossi's approach, that the guard is going to watch them for nothing. The result of this, v'nimtzu lo b'truma, the result of this is that in the public coffers, arbo zuzin, there are four zuz that are, we'll say, earmarked for the guards who aren't going to take the pay. She'ein l'tzibur chelek bohem. And those four zuz that are in the public coffers with the worker with them being earmarked for the shomer, the imkainin mehen tamida musaf and b'shakob and sibur. Imagine that the funds in the truma is the temple treasury. That temple treasury is used for buying other kinds of public sacrifices. The daily Tamidim offering, the Shabbos and holiday Rosh Chodesh Musaf offering, and other types of public sacrifices. So when you apportion in your mind's eye the public funds amongst the various sacrificial acquisitions, a small percentage of each one has a minuscular amount of those four zuz in each one. And that small amount is private. It was earmarked for the shomer. And the result then is that the public sacrifices are not coming from exclusively public funds, because a small fraction of them is from those four zuz earmarked for the shomer. That, in brief, is what the Gemara said in brief when on the second line from the top, Lidvarenu, according to us, the rabbis who say that there are funds that are earmarked for the guards, that according to you, Rabbi Yossi, will remain unpaid and remain in the public coffers, but there are actually four zuz of private funds in the public coffers. Ein boyin, that the boyin in this case is the, we'll call the Sha'ar Kobonus Sibor, will not be Michel Tzibor, coming from exclusively public funds. And of course that has to be avoided. That was their objection to, that's what they meant in their objection to Reb Yossi. V'chein ki also Ravin Omer Reb Yochanan, Chosheshen Lebali Zroos, Ravin, quoting Rabbi Yochanan, says that the point of difference between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi is as we saw in Rava number 2 Bays, where we had the inverted crown, the issue of the Bale Zroos becoming a factor. So, of course, you have to work it all out, as we said, with the Bale Zroos. And the public awareness through those four zuz, was that necessary in order to create the public awareness and everything else that followed suit? So, just to repeat the last point, that Ravin, Om Rabbi Yochanan, explains the machlokes tanoi between Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi in the same way that Rava 2 Beis had explained. The Mishnah. On the side, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, Dvorim Shahoitzi Odom Birishus, Lirishus Rabbim Vehizik, items that a person carried out into a public thoroughfare with permission. Rishus means he had a legal right to do so. And while in the public thoroughfare, they were responsible, or they caused damage, or damage resulted from their presence in the public thoroughfare. The Mishnah: Hamotzi Zevel L'Rishus HaRabim, one who carries out fertilizer, dung, into a public thoroughfare. Hamotzi Motzi V'Amezabel Mezabel, he who carries it out, he carries it out, and it's not to remain there, but rather people who want the dung for their own purposes, they are to carry it away immediately. We look at Rashi right across from here in the Mishnah commentary. Hamotzi motzi v'mezabel mezabel klomar. Klomar is a key expression in Rashi which forewarns you that the understanding is not the straightforward translation. So what is the intent of the Mishnah? To tell me, Eino Rashoi Lahashoi Sisham, he's not allowed to have a delay there. Elozeh Motzio Min Harefes Rishus Harabim, the owner takes it from the stall where the animal stays, and naturally dung accumulates there, and he puts it out into the public thoroughfare. Vanosu Yehei Mizuman Lisa'enu Lisodeh Leginu Lezevel. And whoever wants to take it should be ready to take it immediately to his field or garden for fertilizing purposes. The Mishnah continues. Ein shorin tit b'rishus harabim. Shorin is to have something steep in liquid, soak in liquid. There are places that tit is, we'll call it cement, and we'll just say in a very amateurish nature, the production of cement was a function of having dirt or sand soaking in water for a lengthy period of time. This process of shorin, of having the cement steep in water, the Mishnah tells us is not to be done. Don't leave it in a public thoroughfare. V'ein loivnin levenim. And one is not to form bricks. The Rashi explains, V'ein loivnin levenim, lefi, because shemasha oison liabshon, the bricks that you form, they're wet, it's a wet substance that has to be set out to dry. So they're left there, masha is delayed and left there, liabshon, sheshetech atit bekarka, chaloka, kuvi halavenim. Rashi describes how the bricks were made. The wet cement was poured into onto smooth ground that was ground that was dug out to the depth of the brick. V'choritz bo chritzish tivi orev kamidas levenim, and etching marks were made in a crisscross fashion corresponding to the size of the bricks. Umanichin sham ad shiyavshu, and they would be left there until they dry out. That is not to be done in a public thoroughfare. Avol gavlin tit b'rishus harabim, avolo levenim. Govlin is a mixing or kneading process. Govlin tit, the cement can be mixed in a public thoroughfare for immediate use. Now Rashi adds that critical point. The govlin tit, that's losay. Rashi says losays miyad. Babinyan. But avalo levenim, not to mix the cement for the production of bricks, and which I would take from the context means not for immediate use, but just for the purpose of making bricks, which will be used later on. That is not allowed. Haboine birshus harabim. This section of the Mishnah deals with the construction of a building in a public thoroughfare. In other words, there's a building that needs to be constructed in a public area. Hamevi avonim mevi, whoever is assigned the task of bringing the stones from the quarry, he brings them. Boina, and the one who's charged to build, he receives them from the quarry porters and builds. Vimhizik, Mishale, Mashihizik. And if damage results, if he causes damage, he must pay the damage costs. Rabbi Shimon Leloimer, Af Mesakin Hu Es Malachto Lifnei Shloishim Yoim. Rashi says, Mesakin Mezamein means to set up things, to set up the various building supplies, Birushus HaRabim in the public thoroughfare, V'eino Chayav B'Nezikin, and as long as it's within 30 days of their actual use, their actual building, damage that happens within those 30 days does not obligate the builder to compensate for damages. As we start the Gemara text, we notice triangles. And if you scan ahead, as we always recommend in Gemara markings, you notice how the triangles appear in alternating directions. On the side under the Nosei Mivne heading, we've explained. The triangle is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track. Well, with the of the give-and-take style of the Gemara, with the point facing up, we'll be saying, Lemo masnisin shemechayeves tashem ala nezik delok rebuta. We're going to suggest that our Mishnah is in disagreement with the opinion of Rebbe Yehuda. Our Mishnah, which says that one has to compensate, would appear to be unlike Rebbe Yehuda's opinion, which we've seen this in the past, and we'll see it in the very shortly, Mitzvah Shem, in the Gemara. The inverted triangle will be an attempt on the Gemara's part to say, Afilu Teim Rebbe Yehuda, our Mishnah can conform to Rebbe Yehuda, and we'll have to see how that happens. If you keep track of the back and forth Gemara, you'll notice at the end of this discussion, the last triangle is with a point facing up. Which what will that mean for us? That our Mishnah is not like Rebbe Yehuda. In other words, in all due respect to the attempts of the Gemara, they're not going to be successful. The attempts to align our Mishnah with Rebbe Yehuda will not be successful. And if you skip ahead in the text, you can see where the last triangle appears. The line right after that, Elo Machvarta Masnisa Delo Krebuta, means it's more likely than, and that's clearer to suggest that the Mishnah is not like Rebbe Yehuda. Now the Gemara. Lemo Masnisa Delo Krebbe Yehuda. Shall we suggest, or shall we say, shall we conclude that the Mishnah is not like Rebbe Yehuda? Desanya, Rebbe Yehuda Omer, B'shas Hitzah Zvolim, during the season of Chotzah, means to take out from your house into the public thoroughfare, Zvolim. Zvolim are materials that will eventually serve as fertilizer. Not only dung, but all kinds of organic waste, when put out into the public and the public tramples over it, the chemical reaction that results is that the organic debris turns into fertilizer. So that is called Hoitzah Zvolim. So at the time of year, during the winter season, the rainy season, when it's all muddy outside anyway, Odo Moitzi Zvolo Rishus HaRabim V'tzovro Kol Shloshim Yom, he can take his zevel, all this debris, out into the public thoroughfare. And tzovro means to pile it up for 30 days. Kedei She'ei Nishayf Baragli Odom Ragli Behima, in order for it to be trampled underfoot by people and animals passing by. Shamanas Kain Hinchu Yeshua Yisrael Esaretz. It's with this in mind, with this condition, that the Jewish people in the time of Joshua entered the land, and the deal was made, so to speak, between Yeshua and the Jewish people. Listen, you're going to get this land. We're going to conquer it, divide it. Everyone gets their portion, on condition that it's understood that everyone will have the right to this opportunity, being Moitzis Volim. What impression do you get when you see this? You get the impression that if any damage results from the zevel, from the organic debris put out into the public, you, the owner, are off scot-free. What did our Mishnah say about zevel in the public thoroughfare? It's to be removed immediately, and if not, the owner will be responsible to compensate for damage. The Rashi on the Mishnah said, "Eino rashoi lashos sersham." Here we say it can be out there for 30 days. Let's continue in the Gemara. So it would seem to be that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Afilu temo Rabbi Yehuda. No, we can say that our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda. Moida Rabbi Yehuda shim hizi chayev l'shalem. Rabbi Yehuda concedes that though you had permission to put it out, if damage results, you have to pay. And Rashi points out that our Mishnah as such was an Eitzah Tova, was good advice, so as to avoid becoming obligated to compensate for damage, make sure it gets removed immediately. Question. V'hotnan, Rabbi Yehuda Oimer, b'ner Chanukah, shehu poter b'nei shehu oiseh b'rishus. This quote is somewhat abbreviated, so just a word of background. On the Chanukah holiday, candles, I'm sure everyone is aware, are lit. Where do you light the Chanukah candles? So people were expected to light their candles at the outside the entrance to where they were. Store owners that were in their shops on Chanukah would place their Chanukah candles outside. Now, shops open to a public thoroughfare. You can easily imagine animals laden with burdens walking through the public thoroughfare. The burdens could contain long sheaves of straw or grains or what have you, and their ends could catch fire on candles that are placed outside the entrances to the stores, and that can result in damage. And Rabbi Yehuda says that when it comes to Ner Chanukah, if damage results from the spreading of the fire, he is exempt. The store owner is exempt because he put it out there. Berishus, my lav. The Gemara continues. Berishus de Beistin, he put it there with the approval of the courts. We see then that whatever one puts out into the public thoroughfare, according to Rabbi Yehuda, damage that results does not obligate the owner to compensate. Our Mishnah did not say like that. Lo, what we just explained is not accurate. The idea of Rishus mentioned regarding the Ner Chanukah isn't a function of Rishus based in the court approval. Rishus the mitzvah. It's a special dispensation for the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. But if you're not dealing with a special mitzvah dispensation, then the owner is obligated to compensate, and Rabbi Yehuda could be the author of our Mishnah. Question, V'hatanya. But is it not taught in the following source, Kol Elu Shamru Mutarin L'Kalkeo B'Rishus Rabim? All those examples of things that can be put out into the public that are Mekalkeo literally means things that ruin the public thoroughfare. Im hizik chayev l'shalem, if damage results, so the owner has to compensate. And here's the main point, Rabbi Yehuda poter. Rabbi Yehuda says there is exemption. What did our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah indicated that there would be an obligation to compensate. And the answer we tried to give before, that Rabbi Yehuda agrees that compensation is demanded, that's not so. You see here a clear source, an explicit source, that says Rabbi Yehuda poter. Elo machvarta. Machvarta comes from the word chiver. Chiver is white. Chivra, white. Something clean. And what it means here is that elo machvarta, the clear explanation is that Masnis and the Lok Rabbi Yehuda, our Mishnah, is not in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda. Before we go further, we glance at the side under our topic heading. Abaye mevi rishima shel tanoim. Abaye will present a list of tanoim. The sovrim, the chol mokim shenosnu lo chachamim rishus vehizik potter. That where the individual is operating under rabbinic approval or rabbinic license, we mentioned before court approval, and nevertheless damage results, so the owner is exempt. Now, who's included in this list? Let's see the Gemara. Omar Abaye, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon, Kulu Svir Lehu, they all agree to the principle of Kol Mokom Shenosnu Lo Chachomim Rishus Vehizik Potter. Wherever the Chachomim gave permission, they granted permission, and yet damage resulted, the owner is exempt. Rabbi Huda Hoda Moron. Rabbi Huda, we already said, we saw that in the source, just three lines, four lines above. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Disnan, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Oimer, Af Misakein Hu Es Melachtoi Lifnei Shloishim Yom. This we saw in our Mishnah, with regard to the building materials. The contractor is allowed to assemble his materials up till 30 days before their actual use. We take a look at Rashi, just a few lines down from here. And there's a star we put into the Rashi to help you find it a little faster. Af Misakein Hu V'koya Tanakama, and Rabbi Shimon Leal in the Mishnah is a reaction to the previous opinion, the unnamed first opinion, Diomar Yimhizik Mishalim. He said that if damage results, then payment must be made. V'komar Leihu, Rabbi Shimon Leal responds, Af b'shloishim yom kodim l'chein misakein hu poter. Up till 30 days, even up till 30 days before, within those 30 days, if damage results, he is exempt. So that's how Abaye knew that Rav Shulman Leal is another opinion in this list of Kol Mokim Shesuch HaMim Rishuz Levihizik Potter. Let's continue. Number three, Rav Shimon Disnan. We have a Tanaic source that deals with, we'll call it fire prevention. Fire prevention standards. More specifically, a person has an oven in his house. And the oven naturally is a source of intense heat. In this source, the reference will be made to two kinds of ovens. There's something called a tanur. That word you won't see explicitly, but it's understood. And there's another kind of oven called a kira. Kira is less intense in its heat production. If a person has this in his house, so a certain amount of ceiling or flooring must be in place in order to prevent fire from spreading. The Gemara, Oya Ma'amido Valia, a person put his tanur in an attic or a second story. Tzor she tachtov maziva shloisha tvochim. There has to be plaster underneath it. In our previous year, we saw Tikra and Maziva. The Tikra was a reference to wooden beams that function as the we'll call it the skeleton of the flooring of the second story. In addition to tikra, you need to have cement. Cement, I think, in context, we'll assume is a non-flammable substance. So in order to comply with the safety standards, you have to have three handbreadths of maziva underneath the tanur that you place in the attic. Ubekira, if you're placing a kira in the ali in the attic, tefach, one handbreadth thickness of maziva is sufficient. V'im hizik, mishali mashi hizik. And if damage resulted, you have to compensate. Rabbi Shimon Oimer, and once again we want to focus on Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon Oimer, lo omru kol hashiurim halolu, all of these standards were not stated. Elohim, he's a poter milishalim. Rather, indicate that one who complies with these standards, if damage results, he is exempt from paying. So you can see that Reb Shimon is the third member of the list of Tanoim that Abaye presented, where Kol Mokom Shenosilo Chachom Rishus Vizik Potter. Before we go further, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading, the Nosei, which reads Sidro Shel Poale Binyan. We're going to have a series of different construction workers. We'll say different professions within construction. So it's a series of workers, different kinds of workers that are involved with their work. Kol echod betafkido, each one at his position. V'nofel even me echod mehem v'hizik, and a stone or a brick fell from any one of these and caused damage. So now let's see further detail. Tonu Rabbanan. Chatzov. Chatzov is the one that used stones from the mountain or from the quarry. Shemosa Lasatos. Satos is a worker that chisels away at the raw stone to give it the appropriate form or shape for building. So once the Chatzov gave the stone to the Satos, Hasatos Chayav, the Satos bears responsibility if any damage happens as a result of the stone falling from him. Hasatos Shemosa L'chamor. Chamor is the transporter. Chamor literally as a chamor is a donkey. Donkey was a beast of burden. So the stone given from the Satos to the chamor, Hachamor Chayav, if damage happens at that point, he bears exclusive responsibility. Achamor Shemosar Lakosef. Akosef Chayev. Kosef is someone who would carry the stones from the donkey. Kosef literally is a shoulder. So he's also involved with the moving of the stones. Kosef Chayev. If damage happens at that point, he bears exclusive responsibility. Hakosef Shemosar Labanoi. Abanoi Chayev. If the damage happens after the Kosef transfers the stone to the Banoi. Banoi is the builder. He takes the stone from the person who was carrying it and places it on the structure. Now he places it on the structure. If the stone falls and damages at that point, so the Banoi is obligated to compensate. HaBanoi Shemoser L'Adrichal, Adrichal Chayav. The Banoi that gives over control to the Adrichal. The Adrichal in modern Hebrew means one thing. I will not get into that so as not to create any confusion. In Rashi, he is the one that after the stone is placed in its appropriate spot, he positions it. We'll call him the positioner of the stones. If damage happens at that point that the Adrichal takes over, Adrichal Chayev. V'miniach even al ha-dimus v'ziko, if the stone is placed on the dimus. The dimus is the row. Every wall is made of successive rows of stones. If after the stone was placed there and the Adrichal took care of it and left the scene, and then damage results, Kulan Chayovin L'Shalim, they all of the workers bear joint responsibility. The Gemara, I should say, the Rashi, in the wide lines under the Gemara, let's say about six lines under the Gemara, Kulan, Elu, Hayu Shutfin b'Malacha Achas. All of these are partners in the one effort, in one building effort. Mushinichu Even Aladimus, and once the stone is placed on the row, he shuras the row habinyan of the building. Nafal Mazika, it then fell and caused damage. Hayovalav Kechid Adrichalhu. At this point, it's not falling as a result of a force invested in the stone by the Adrichal. Shalash Shenicha, after he positioned it, Nafla, it then fell, not as he was positioning it, but after he positioned it. And since he's not physically attached to it anymore, we can't hold him responsible as if it were coming from literally his arrows, which means from his force. Kulan chayovan yachad, the burden or obligation of compensation falls upon all of them. Kulan shutafim badavar, they're all partners in this joint effort of construction. The job is upon them to be completed, and they accept upon themselves joint responsibility. The Gemara now asks, Tanya, but we have a Tanaic source that says, given the same circumstances, Achron Chayav Kulan Pturin. The last one is Chayav. The last one would be the Adrichal, the positioner. He alone is chayav, and all the rest are exempt. So that's against what we just said. We dashed underline in the previous phrase, kulan chayavin, and here we dashed underline kulan pturin. Lo kashya. There is no disagreement. Kan beschirus, kan bekablonus. It depends on the work arrangement. If it's schirus, schirus is a reference to people that are paid per diem, by the hour, by the day, as opposed to kablonus, which is I think you could refer to it as a contractual arrangement. You're paid for the job. Whether it takes a long time or little time, that's irrelevant. You're getting paid for the completion of the job. So in a case where the workers are being paid as schirus, then we say only the last one is obligated to compensate. If the arrangement is kablonus, as long as it's a situation where it didn't fall directly from the hand of one of them, but as we explained before, after the stone was already placed and positioned, Rashi explains where it's a kablonus job, paid for the job, ultimately they all accept upon themselves a level of responsibility to make sure that the stone or the brick was sitting well and should not have fallen off. So, just to repeat then, in a kablonus arrangement, that's the source that said kulan chayavan, that they would all bear responsibility after the adrichal had left the site. The Mishnah. We glance in the margin, we have an Osei topic heading, which reads, Shtei Ginois Zu Al Gav Zu. Two gardens, one above the other, Betsuras Meduragim, we'll call it a step fashion, just like steps, one is, each succeeding step is higher than the other, with a 90 degree angle between them. The two gardens we're describing here are in a terraced fashion. The hayerek yotze beintayim, and some vegetation is growing out between them, like from the side, from the vertical part of the soil. Lefin Rava ba Gemara, according to Rava in the Gemara, hatanoim cholkim lemi shayech nofo. Who is considered the owner of the branches that are extending forth in midair? Mi amrino shodi nofo basuri koro. Do we say that we associate the branch with its roots? Now the roots, I think we can say with a certain degree of assuredness, the roots are found underneath the upper garden. And as a result of them being underneath the upper garden, they are, the roots are his, the owner of the upper garden. But question now is, what about the branches that extend forth in midair? Now the Gemara. Omar, the Mishnah, first the Mishnah, obviously. Shtei ginos zu al gav zu, two gardens, one positioned above the other in a terraced fashion, vayerek beintayim, and vegetation is growing out between them. Rabbi Meir Omer shel Elyon, Rabbi Yehuda Omer shel Tachton. Rabbi Meir assigns or ascribes ownership to the upper one and Rabbi Yehuda to the lower one. And now, as we go on in the Mishnah, we'll see a type of back and forth discussion, each one advancing their positions. Omer Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir, who granted ownership of the Yerek to the upper one, Rabbi Meir says, Im yirtze ha'elyon likach es afro en kanyerek. If the upper garden owner were to remove, were to excavate his garden, remove all the dirt, there'd be no yerek, there'd be no vegetation. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Im yirtze ha'tachton, let me state the obvious. According to Rabbi Meir, if the upper garden owner wanted to excavate his garden, there would be no yerek left, so he's in full control. Therefore, Rabbi Meir assigned ownership of the yerek to the upper owner. Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Im yirtze ha'tachton lemalois ezginoso, ein kan yerek. If the lower garden owner would decide to fill up his garden, pile up earth, so then the yerek would no longer exist. It would be buried in the earth of the lower garden. Omar Rabbi Meir, me'achar sheshneim yecholim limchois zeh al zeh. After both have, arguments, one against the other, Rowan mehechon yerek zechai. We evaluate the ownership based on what is the source of life, of nutrition of this vegetation. And when you look at things like that, you will come to the conclusion that it belongs to the upper guy, because the sustenance of this plant is drawn from the roots, and the roots are underneath the upper garden. Omar Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon has a different approach in dealing with this situation. He says, Kol she'elyon yochol lifshoit es yodo v'litoil arei u'shelo. Any vegetation that the upper garden owner could lifshoit es yodo, stretch out his hand and take hold of it, it's his. Vashar shel tachton. Beyond that, whatever is growing lower down belongs to the lower guy. Rashi, second line from the bottom, kol she'elyon yochol lifshoit yodo v'lito reu shelo. Any vegetation that's growing at a height from which the upper garden owner could stretch his hand and take hold of it, it belongs to him. And now Rashi adds, "Kama Rabbi Meir, Hayo Ume Afro Hi Chaya." Allotting or ascribing of vegetation to upper guy. If you like this pun, is rooted in Rabbi Meir's thinking that since it derives its sustenance from the dirt, and the dirt belongs to the upper guy, so that he is entitled to take. Vashar shel tachton ve'elyon hu gufei afkurim nifkar lahu legabei. The upper guy himself is foregoing ownership of it. Rashi is addressing the obvious question. Once you explained that Rabbi Shimon's ascribing of the higher level growing vegetation based on Rabbi Meir's analysis of Me'afru Chaya, so why is it limited only to that, only to those growing within arm's length of the upper guy? Even further down, it should go to the upper owner. And yet, Rabbi Shimon says not so, and he explains. Because the upper guy himself, who technically speaking has a claim to the vegetation at whatever height it's growing out the side, he foregoes a claim to it. He's mafkir it to the owner, to the lower guy. Why? What's the psychology or the logic over here? Shegnai hu lo litol rishus likones l'seich shel chaver v'lilkei. It's beneath his dignity to go to the lower guy, his neighbor down below, and request permission. Can I come in to your property, get on a ladder maybe or whatever, and pick the vegetation from the side, from that vertical portion? So as a result of the, we'll call it the social dynamic, you see the financial result. So that even though on the strictly technical basis, ownership might have been, according to Rabbi Shimon, of course, be granted exclusively to the upper guy, nevertheless, because of the social considerations, Rabbi Shimon points out, any vegetation that the upper guy has access to on his own without any favors of the lower guy, so that's what he gets. But once you become dependent on the other guy, forget it. I don't care. Even I might have a right to it. I'm foregoing those rights. Quite a bit of insight into the human psyche and social behavior. Let's now turn to the Gemara. Omar Rava Beikoro Kule Amo Lo Pligi De Elyon Have. As far as the Ikoro, the roots of the Yerek, Rashi says the Shoro Sheha Yerek, that everyone agrees belongs to the upper guy. And everyone agrees, I would like to assume that Reb Shimon as well. And I think that if we on our own we were to continue the psychological analysis, this makes perfect sense. As far as the roots are concerned, the upper guy doesn't need to rely on any permission granting or favors from the lower guy. Upper guy can dig and dig and dig as deep as he wants under his own property and gain access to the roots. So everyone agrees that the roots belong to the upper guy. Ki pligi benofo. The disagreement that we saw in the Mishnah is with regard to the branches, that which grows, that extends forth into the light of day, into midair. Rabbi Meir, who said branches go to upper guy, Savar Shadi Nofo Basari Karo, that in order to determine branch ownership, you associate them. Shadi literally means you send them Basar following their roots. Rabbi Yehuda who assigned the Nof to the lower guy, holds Lo Aminan Shadi Nofo Basari Karo. We don't associate the branches with the roots. Vitanyo Nami Gabi Mekach Umemkar Ki Hai Gavna. And a similar analysis appears regarding transactions. Desanya. And now we have a Tanaic source, and I think it's noteworthy that Rashi that will be relevant is found at the top of Daf Kuf Yud Tes Omid Aleph. So before we go further in the reading of the text, let's glance at Rashi at the top of Kuf Yud Tes Omid Aleph, where he says, using the words of the Gemara, which we haven't read yet, Ilon Hayotze Min HaGeza V'chulei. B'lokech Ilon Echod B'sel Shechavero. If a person purchases a singular tree in someone else's field, we hold the Kaimelon Baba Vasra, we hold, based on that which is taught in Maseches Baba Vasra, the Divrei HaKol Lo Kona Karka, everyone agrees that you do not gain any ownership of the ground. Notice you bought a singular tree, And in the course of time, if that tree dries out, it ages and is no longer productive, the owner of the ground can tell the person who bought the tree, listen, your tree isn't producing fruit anymore. Take it away from here. Now, what happened? Guy bought an individual tree, doesn't own the ground. The Ilan Katan Hayotze Mina Shoroshim, and a new tree growth emerges from the roots. The roots obviously let's assume the roots are underground, and a new tree emerges from the roots. Les dina v'les dina the karka gemurahi. The expression les dina v'les dina means it's clear as day. There's no argument. There's no discussion necessary in order to determine who is the owner of that. That is karka gemura. That is that belongs to the owner of the ground. It doesn't belong to the guy who bought the tree. So even though it's coming from the roots of that tree that he bought, it's said to be emerging from the ground. And we pointed out that in buying a singular tree, you don't get any ownership of the ground. Umin hageza nami, regarding a new tree growth that extends from the geza, from the trunk. As far as what height off the ground we are discussing now, I would like to suggest we're talking about growing from the trunk within 3 tefachim of the ground. I'm basing myself on a Rashi that is found a few lines down from here, Dibor Masel Chayav Ba'arla, which the Gemara will tie in later to this discussion. And at that point, that dimension is mentioned. So, we have a new tree growth growing forth from the trunk. Uminagesa nami Rabbi Meir Sovar Shodi Noifoi Bosari Koro. You will evaluate the new growth, we'll call it the nof in this case, Bosari Koro. You associate it with the Ikoro. V'hosu Meforesh Mai Geza Umai Shoroshin. And there in Bava Basra, these terms are clarified. What do you mean by Geza? And what do you mean by Shoroshin? Geza is called Shiroi Pene Chamo, that which sees the light of day. It's above ground. Shoroshin She'en Royin Pene Chamo. Shoroshin roots do not see the sun. V'yafagav Deshevach Nof Ho'elyon Lebal Ho'ilon. Even though the increase in branch development above, way above, that clearly is associated with the tree that was purchased by that customer. Kidiktoni Hosam, Igdila Lo Yishafe, if the upon the increased growth of branches, the owner of the field cannot force owner of tree to prune, to cut those branches. Hosamhu, Dadaito Dahochi Nochas. There, it's understood because that was the original understanding. If you're selling a tree to a purchaser of the purchaser of the tree is entitled to allow the branches of the tree to grow as much as they can grow. As long as the tree is capable of producing fruits, the tree is to remain in the ground and grow branches and fruits. Aval ilon acher ha'ola min ha'geza, but a new tree that emerges from the trunk, ilono achrina hu. That's a new entity that wasn't part of the original agreement. That is, and therefore it would not be associated with the tree. And it's and that is what Rabbi Meir is going to tell us in the source we are about to read. Now let's turn back to Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis, and the issue of Shodi Nofo Bosri Koro comes up, as we said here, in this case of Mekach U'Memkar, of transactions. We're reading now from Kuf Yud Ches Omid Beis, second line from the bottom. Ilan, a new tree growth. Hayotze min hageza umin hashoroshim. That comes from the trunk or from the roots. Notice when we speak about the geza, we're talking about the trunk. True, it's above ground. But this opinion, that of Rabbi Meir, associates emergence from geza and from roots. Are elu shel bal hakarka. Divrei Rabbi Meir. They belong to the owner of the land, not the fellow who bought the tree. And we explained, because this is Rabbi Meir's opinion. Shodi nofo bosari karo. That which is emerging now is associated with the ikur, with the roots, and even though the geza is not literally speaking the roots, I suggested before the Rashi speaks in terms of within three tefachim of the ground, and in general that which is within three tefachim is associated with the ground itself. We speak of within three tefachim of the ground, it's considered the ground. That's Rabbi Meir's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, min hageza, it's emerging from the trunk, and we saw in Rashi before, it's above ground. Shobal ho'ilon, the new tree growth belongs to the one who bought the tree. Umin ha'shoroshin, that which is coming from the new tree growth that's emerging from the roots are underground, that's shobal ha'karka. And you can see that Rabbi Yehuda does not take the approach of shadi nofo bosari koro, that we associate the branches with the roots, unless it's literally from the roots, as opposed to it coming from the geza. We continue at the top of Kuf Yud Tes Omid Aleph. Utnan Nami Gabi Orla. And we have a similar idea or teaching with regard to the laws of Orla. Orla, for those who may not be familiar, is a reference to the Torah prohibition of deriving any benefit from fruit that grows from a tree within its first 3 years of development. That's a very, very general statement. And now we'll see how the laws of Orla and within the first 3 years apply to a new tree, which emerges from a pre-existing, we'll call an old tree. Ilan hayotze min hageza min hashoroshin, a new tree growth that emerges from the trunk. And I know that we might sound a bit repetitive from time to time, but we'll do it at that risk. We'll point out the Rashi we mentioned before, that we're talking about the trunk within three tefachim of the ground. And even though this new growth is not deriving its sustenance from the ground itself, we nevertheless view it as being associated with the ikur, with the roots. So a new tree growth that emerges from the geza, or from the actual roots, chayav b'orla, divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir is looking at that which is emerging from the lower part of the trunk as if it's coming from the ground. And that would mean it's a new growth. It's not associated with the old tree. That's Rabbi Meir. And as a result, the laws of Orla will apply to the fruit that grows from this new tree emergence, even if it's emerging from the geza. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, min hageza poter, min hashoroshin chayav. If it's coming from the geza, it's exempt. It's coming from a new tree growth emerging from the trunk of the old tree, which is coming from a point that sees the light of day. I know that it's within three tefachim of the ground, but it's nevertheless, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, though in other areas of halacha, within three tefachim might be halachically considered the ground, nevertheless, regarding Orla and regarding the commercial transaction we spoke of above, it's associated with the tree. So Rabbi Yehuda says, Minageza Potter, if it's the new tree is emerging from the trunk, it is exempt from Arla because it's coming from the trunk of an old tree, a tree that's beyond beyond 3 years. If it's Minashroshim, if it's from the actual roots, Rabbi Yehuda will concede it's Chayav in Arla. So now what we really have, so we have two Tanaic sources. We had diamonds that introduced the two Tanaic sources, and the reason for these diamonds is, in addition to the fact that it's they introduced two Tanaic sources with Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir in them, we still have to we have to ask ourselves the question as to why do I need to have this machlokas taught twice? Would it not have been sufficient to teach it once, and I would be able to let's say extrapolate from one source and conclude that these two Tanaim would continue their machlokes, their disagreement in the circumstances of the other source without actually stating it explicitly? Utsrichi, I need both to be taught and not to be left on my own to reach conclusions. Notice we have a long point marking. This is one point to explain why I need both sources. The Yashmin and Kamaisa, had we taught just the first case, the case involving a commercial transaction, the realm of mominous, of financial dealings, as opposed to ritual law, which we call Esor. So you have Mammon versus Esor. So if we would have taught the first source, the transaction, the was Mekach u'Memkar, Baha Koma Rabbi Yehuda, there Rabbi Yehuda said what he did, namely that that which is coming from the Geza, we don't associate it with the ground, we associate it with the Baal Ilan. He said it over there, Mishum de Mamona. You're dealing with the realm of Mamonos, where in the realm of Mamonos, we have more, we'll say, flexibility, more latitude, and the rabbis have the koyach of declaring who owns what. It's a concept of hefker besk, and hefker may have relevance over here. And therefore, that which is coming from the geza, Rabbi Yehuda, in the commercial transaction, can say it belongs to the Baal Ho'ilan. However, Avogabi Orla de Isura, when it comes to the laws of Orla, Orla involves, or is part of the realm of ritual law. Is it mutter? Can you eat it? Or is it forbidden to eating? Is it forbidden? So when you're in a realm like that, Amal, on my own, I would have said, Moidele the Rabbi Meir, that he would have, Rabbi himself would have conceded to Rabbi Meir, and view the new growth, even though it's coming from the Geza, from above ground, associated with the ground, the result being a prohibition. So when you're dealing with ritual law, there's a certain attitude or approach that when you're in doubt, play it safe. Safek Isura Lechumra. That what I'm saying is just a general way of thinking without getting into fine distinctions between Dinim Deraisa and Dinim Derabbanan. Orla, basically speaking, is a Din Deraisa anyway. I would have thought that if you have any doubt, Safek Deraisa, be Machmir and prohibited, and associate the Ilan Hayotze from the Geza with the ground. So I would have thought that Rabbi Yehuda would agree with Rabbi Meir. V'yitmar b'ha, and if we would have stated their machlokas only with regard to Orla, b'ha, Rabbi Meir. It's only here that Rabbi Meir would say that the new tree growth coming from the Geza is associated with the ground. Because by saying that, you are declaring it prohibited as Orla. Avo Bayi, in the case of a commercial transaction, Ema Modi Leila Rabbi Yehuda, maybe there Rabbi Meir would have conceded to Rabbi Yehuda that as long as the new tree growth is coming from the trunk of the purchase tree, the new tree growth belongs to the tree purchaser. Tricky. Therefore, I need to teach the machlokas Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yehuda regarding a commercial transaction, so as to make it clear that Rabbi Meir will continue his position that Ilan Yotzei Min HaGeza is not going to be part of the purchased tree. Om Rabbi Shimon,
Kol she'oyon yochol lifshog v'chule. Rabbi Shimon had his unique method of determining ownership of branches of vegetation extending from the side of the terrace, the terraced gardens. And what did Rabbi Shimon say? Kol she'oyon yochol lifshog, all branches growing forth at a height from which the owner of the upper garden could extend his arm and reach it, it belongs to the upper guy. Amri debe rabbiani b'vashel ye'ones. When we speak about stretching out your hands, so debe rabbiani says, it means stretching in an effortless fashion. But if if you're dealing with vegetation that the upper guy could reach, but ye'ones, by forcing himself, by straining himself, and without that he couldn't reach it. So in a case like that, Rabbi Shimon will say it does not belong to the upper guy. If the upper guy's access was only through straining, it doesn't go to him, it doesn't belong to him. Boy, Rav Onan, v'itemo Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rav Onan, and some versions have Rabbi Yirmiyah, say, asking, magia lenofo v'ein magia likoro. How would you rule upon a case that the upper guy could reach the branches, but he cannot reach the roots? In other words, they're growing in a it's growing in an angular fashion. How do you determine that? So what Rav Onan is describing is partial physical access. He can reach the branches that are growing upwards, hence they're nearer to where he is in that upper garden, but he can't reach the ikoro. Ikoro would ordinarily mean roots. What is the din? Teku. And this is left unresolved. Personally, I have a slight difficulty with this question if you are going to make a certain assumption. We had at the beginning of the Gemara Rava saying that regarding Ikoro, everyone agrees that it belongs to the upper guy. If you make that assumption, if you assume that Rav Onan accepts that, then you have the following situation. You have the Ikoro certainly belonging to the upper guy. You have branches that upper guy can reach. So why would you be raising this as a question to begin with? If, however, you take the position that not like Rava, that regarding Ikoro, whatever machlokis existed regarding that we saw in amongst the Tanoim would apply to the Ikoro as well. Okay, so then you have a reasonable question where you have, we'll say, partial access to the plant. You can reach the branches and not the ikur. How do we resolve that? So then that is left, teku, is unresolved. Omar Ephraim Safra, Talmido, Shel, Reish Lakish, Mishum Reish Lakish, Halachak Rabbi Shimon. Ephraim Safra, a student of Reish Lakish, quoting his Rebbe, Reish Lakish, says, we will rule like Rebbe Shimon. He was I don't want to call him the compromise approach, but he was the one in the Mishnah that said that the ownership of the Yerek growing out the side is dependent on whether the upper guy has access to it or not. Amrua Kamei Deshovur Malka. This approach of Rebbe Shimon was said to Shovur Malka. There are different opinions as to who Shovur Malka is. We'll take the simple approach for right now, and that is it's a reference to the Persian monarch, King Shafur. King Shafur was a gentleman. He was a Persian monarch, and he's also someone I believe is considered a man of wisdom, knowledgeable in financial law,
And they shared this teaching that the ruling of Reb Shimon with Shavur Maka Omar Lahu, and this Persian monarch responded, Apirion Nimte L'Rabbi Shimon. Apirion would be, Rashi says, Chein Shalonu, our grace, our approval. Shavur Maka was, in our terms, was highly impressed with Rabbi Shimon's resolution of this particular issue. There are other commentaries. First of all, Shavur Maka, Rashi gives an explanation that you see in other places in the Shas as well, that it's a reference to the great Amora Shmuel, who was, because of his expertise in Dine Momenus, was termed the like the Persian monarch. However, Rashi himself doesn't feel comfortable with that explanation of Shavur Malka over here, prefers leaving it in a literal as a literal reference to the Persian monarch who was impressed with this ruling. The word apirion, we read Rashi's pshat of chein shalonu. I saw in other sforim that apirion is a reference to Ephraim. Ephraim Safra, he was the student of Reish Lakish that issued this ruling, and hence there's a reference to his name in this final statement. So with the help of the Almighty, we, Baruch Hashem, were successful in being Messiah, Maseches, Bava Metzia. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.